you know, she's very much an ambassador for that, for those kind of things now.
Yes, I did smile when she said I actually ended up with more scars from the operation than I did from the bloody accident.
Yeah, the scars from the skin grafts. I mean, the other thing to, you know, the one thing I get a sense that still bothers her, when Catherine trained as a hairdresser in Alice Springs, she had beautiful, thick, long blonde hair, and she was used as a model by other hairdressers for big competitions, which they won. And, you know, there were great sections of her scalp that, with all the scar tissue, did not grow hair again. So that is the one thing that you get the sense that she kind of is still conscious of and, you know, regrets. But the rest of it, you know, she's just bounced back from it so strongly.
Indeed. Of course, she then, having gone back to the farm and a few years down the track, did in fact have a marriage breakup because her ex-husband, of course, was a new cop from the Northern Territory, and she really decided that enough was enough in that relationship.
Yeah.
And moved on.
She did, and she now has, I mean, she has two grown-up children from her first marriage, and she now has two young children with her new partner, who loves motherhood. She just loves all of her kids, but she has an incredibly close relationship with her two older children who helped her get through the recovery after the accident and when she was running the farm on her own. And now she has two younger children, so she stepped back a little from the farm management in recent years to focus on them. She's sort of, her life is well, and, you know, sort of turned around quite significantly.
It really is quite extraordinary when you think about it, what she's managed to achieve in that time, you know?
Yes, and it is a relatively short time.
Well, it is. It's quite fascinating. Now, I suppose that it's very difficult to go through all of these, of course, because you've got eight portraits. I thought the high flyer, who's now in Tasmania, Nan Bray, who is now in Oaklands, was a CSIRO division chief.
Yeah.
And she gave it all up to go on to the land. God help us.
Yeah, she's
that's extraordinary story.
Merino wool producer.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think she did that at the time when prices were not sensational either, so most people would be shaking their heads about why she did it. Nan's story is very different. I mean, there's, you know, she made a deliberate decision to become a farmer. She grew up in America. Her grandparents were ranchers in Idaho. I think they referred to sheep as hill maggots. So sheep were not held in high esteem in the country she came from. However, her father was a brilliant scientist. He won a scholarship as a young man and went off to university, and he became a specialist in, I'm not good at science, but, you know, a branch of nuclear physics that was to do with generating electricity. And she grew up in a house with this man who was an amazing scientist, and Nan herself is an extraordinary scientist. She decided to, in the end, after lots of false starts, she discovered oceanography. And so she spent most of her young adult years in California working as an oceanographer and in one of the world's sort of great research facilities in that sector. And she ended up coming to Tasmania on a 12-month sabbatical to work with their counterparts at Hobart, where there was a marine division.
Yeah.
And loved it so much that she stayed. And she'd always bred sheepdogs. She breeds some American Border Collies. She'd had them back in the States, and she actually brought one of her dogs with her over to Tassie when she was coming for the year. So there was this kind of sheep connection there before she made this change. But she decided that she wanted to buy a farm and have a go at running sheep. And so she found this property in a very traditional wool-growing area in the centre of Tasmania, and was extremely fortunate in the early stages of buying that to come across this extraordinary man, Davey, who was a third-generation shepherd, now in his 80s, who helped teach, you know, Nan how to go about it. He taught her the ropes of breeding, you know, elite merino sheep. And producing beautiful wool.
And what a great partnership it's proved to be, because she's producing some of the finest wool in Tasmania.
Yes, it is.
Unreal.
It is a lovely story of, you know, two people from very different backgrounds and very different generations. The highly qualified scientist and Davey, who left school at the age of 12 with his pony and his dog and went working sheep. And how this absolute meeting of minds and,
yep, unreal.
And how they've created something quite special on this property where, you know, the focus is, I guess you could say radical, in that Nan has taken some very different approaches to how she runs her sheep, gone back in many ways to practices that Davey's father would have been familiar with, and also she's also very conscious of environmental management issues. So her whole management techniques on the property are quite different to a lot of other properties in the area, but starting to attract attention from other wool and sheep producers because she's had quite a few years now where it's worked.
Yes, she doesn't dock the tails of her sheep.
Well, for one, she's only just started that. She doesn't dock the tails of the lambs anymore. There's no mulesing. She was quite adamant about that from day one. She runs the sheep in family groups instead of age. Mobs broken down by age. So there are multiple generations of the sort of one family running in a paddock together, very much based on the philosophy that the younger sheep learn grazing practices and things like that from the older sheep, so they stay together.
Mm. Well, finally, we'll talk about perhaps the eldest lady of the group that you chose, a lady from Victoria called Cecily Cornish.
Yes.
What a fascinating story that is. Here she is, 80, and still mucking about.
She is. She's still running a farm, and she's turned 80, I think, last year. Cecily is another woman whose parents didn't want her to be a farmer.
Funny that.
I mean, she always wanted to be a farmer, but she met and fell in love with a man, and his work took them to live in Melbourne. She was horse mad as a young girl. She her father and her mother's family were both heavily involved in breeding horses, and at the age of 19. Just a couple of years after the war, Cecily was sent to England to find a stallion to found a new Arabian horse stud, which I think is extraordinary in itself. She had an aunt who also knew something about horses go with her, but essentially it was put into their hands to go and find a horse that would provide a sort of strong foundation for this horse stud, and she found this amazing grey stallion called Raphael, which she brought back. She had shipped back to England, and that started the horse stud. But not too long afterwards, she met her husband John and fell in love, and ended up moving to Melbourne. And it took her quite a few years to actually have the opportunity to come back to the family farm and become a farmer.
Indeed so. And, of course, she's got a daughter who's another high flyer, but in a different different vocation.
Yes. Edwina is a scientist, like her dad. she's actually Deputy Vice Chancellor of Monash University, which is no small thing indeed.
Yes.
Research and academia. And Edwina, like her mum, loves the farm. This property is just something that's obviously got under the skin of all of the family. And Edwina well and truly plans to sort of leave university life eventually and go back there and take over running it from her mum.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And this dear old Cecily, here she is, still wandering about, checking on the heifers, doing all the things on the farm, doesn't worry about the rain, the wind or the sun.
No, you know what, the time I was there, it was winter and the weather was awful, as it can be on...
Oh, yes, Victoria's well known.
It's just wind straight from Antarctica that comes straight through you. And, I had trouble keeping up with her. She was up early, first thing in the morning, feeding the lambs. She has this most amazing kitchen. The heart and soul of the house is this Argus stove with about five ovens. And the bottom oven, the warming oven, is where the orphan lambs go to revive them in their first hours away from their mum. And she had at the back door two lambs that she was hand-rearing that she'd saved their lives with the Arga oven treatment, and so she had the lambs to care for. She has horses that she still feeds. She's not working them anymore, but she has some horses that still need sort of feeding every day, and she goes out every day and checks the sheep and the cattle. That's part of her routine every day. And depending on the time of the year, she goes out with another retired man who's living in one of the workers' cottages on the property. They go out and feed the cattle and the sheep. So she's very much hands-on.
It's I tell you what sticks out like a sore thumb in all these portraits you've written about these ladies is that none of them, but none of them, are afraid of hard work.
No, absolutely not. Not afraid of hard work, not afraid to admit when they don't know something and needed to go and ask for help. That stood out really clearly. Just, you know, and they all love it. They genuinely love farming and what they're doing.
What a marvellous bunch of ladies. All right, what's next for you?
Well, I've got a couple more sort of books that I'm sort of working on at the moment. I've almost finished a manuscript about a tiny little fishing community on the coast of South Australia called Robe, which has a quite fascinating history dating back from the 1840s. And when I'm done that, I'm doing my second book about the traditions of country show cooking.
Ah, right,
and
yes.
So I was actually, while I was over in WA and also a year before that, I went to the Perth show as part of my quest for Australia's best country show cooks.
Oh, wow, plenty of them around here.
Anyone in your area who thinks that they're a pretty good show cook and has, and it must be, a first prize winning recipe that they
I got one of them.
Share with the world.
Got one of those. I'll send it to you. My locut jam won a first prize.
That's fabulous, Pat. You're on the official qualification list. So.
Well done. Well done. Well, we'll get a copy of that when it comes, and we will we'll come back to you and have a chat about all these wonderful recipes you've managed
I'd
to,
love to do
get.
That.
Oh, that'd be great. Liz, thank you so much. And it is a most inspiring book. I guess, whilst we know country people are going to lap it up, you really would like city people to buy this.
I would. Because one of the things I've tried to do, apart from telling the personal stories, is to write about the daily life of being a farmer, what's involved, and try and help people reconnect with what goes on to produce the food and fibre on which we all rely. So, and I've tried to do it in an entertaining way, but so that it, you know, as these women are sharing their stories, people can start to get a bit of a feel for what farming is really all about. So I'm very hopeful that city people will buy the book and it will help achieve some of those aims, which is, of course, is what the Australian Year of the Farmer is all about.
Indeed. And when I heard just recently that a survey in Australia showed 60% of kids thought cotton came from bloody sheep, I really nearly died, I have to tell you. And the kids in England, 60% of them thought potatoes grew on trees. It's all a bit frightening, isn't it?
It is a bit scary, you know, but it doesn't take long for the generational knowledge to be lost.
Exactly, yeah.
Which, you know, is a point made by one of my other women farmers, Lynette, who has an orchard and a commercial sort of market garden in the hills out of Sydney. You know, she said, you know, it's not that many years ago that everybody knew how to grow their veggies in the backyard, and it really doesn't take too many years before people no longer know what a real apple tastes like or, or, you know, how to dig a potato out of the garden.
Indeed. Now, this book, Women of the Land, produced by Allen and Unwin. Liz Harfull is the writer, and you can find it in every good bookshop around Australia. Liz, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. We'll keep in touch, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Liz Harfull joining us there on the line from Adelaide.